Welcome to a bonus episode, really, of Widnes Rugby Chat. We did promise to do two episodes this week to make up for last week, and when we decided to do that, we probably didn't realise how much news there would be. We'll hopefully tackle it all in this episode, as well as go through some of your Q&As. There's a few bigger Q&As that we might leave to future weeks, and then we'll round it off with our predictions ahead of the championship weekend. Mike, where do you want to start?
Well, it's strap yourself in, isn't it? Put your seatbelt on, because it's been a heck of a week. But I think we should start, considering the last podcast that we did was a little bit not on the negative side, but I think we should start with the biggest positive for the week for me, and start with Matty Fozard and a 3-year deal for him.
Yeah. A big piece of news for Widnes. I think there was fears that certainly Oldham and a few other clubs were sniffing around him. And I think it was imperative, in my opinion, that Widnes keep Matty Fozard. I think it's imperative that Widnes keep as many of the local hometown players as possible, because I think ultimately in a part-time environment, it's always good to have a nucleus of your own players, if that makes sense, without having to, you know, almost start from scratch every year. And I'd almost include Adam Lawton in that conversation. That's another piece of news that's happened this week. Adam Lawton coming in on a 2-week loan, which might lead to more, I guess. I would include players like him in that conversation, where I thought it was a mistake when Widnes let him go. I get that he's a bit of a Marmite player, and we'll talk about him in a little bit, but I think keeping Fozard is a key bit of business for Widnes. And I think if you look at Fozard, there's a few others in the team. There's five or six of them maybe that are local lads or came through the system, etc. They've got to be tied down as early as possible, because as we're going to explore in this, it's hard enough to recruit players as it is without keeping your own players. Ultimately, part-time rugby, you're asking people to, you know, if you're not going to have your local players, you're asking people to travel, which then limits your options of who you can bring in. So Fozard's probably head and shoulders Widnes' best player at the moment, has probably been consistently for maybe 18 months, 2 years. So really good to tie him down.
100%. I think consistency there is the word, James, really, that kind of describes Foz the best. There's been times where in the past, even, I've seen us get a bloody good hiding, and yet his performance levels never dip. He brings excitement for fans. You know, when he comes onto the pitch, the team seem to lift. And the fans get excited when he's on the ball and running with the ball. I think sometimes his defensive attributes get overlooked because of how good he is with the ball in hand. I think he's, you know, pound for pound, he's up there defensively as well. No, Jordan Johnson gets a lot of plaudits in that department, but Foz is up there in that department, in that category as well with Jordan defensively. I think for Widnes and fans, like you say, in my opinion, I share the same as you. By far, our most consistent player and best player this season, especially. And you know, for fans to buy season tickets for next year, that's the type of player that you want the club to put a marker down and not only sign them for next year. You've gone right. Is our star player for 3 years, and we're going to build a team around that. And it kind of, it puts down a marker, it puts down a bit of a roadmap of the team and how it's going to look in the spine for the years to come, and how the pieces are going to fit around it, and a quality player at that. So I think it gives fans the assurance. But like I say, there's not many players, mate, that you can go on a Widnes Facebook group page and when they announce something about a player where there's not one negative comment. And I think that in itself probably sums up Fozim one, and his family and himself can be incredibly proud of that, because he is absolutely a massive fan's favourite for obvious reasons. And I go even further, and I know a couple of people have touted it on social media, and I'm gonna stick my hand up and back it and say he is the best hooker in the league. And if he was playing in a Featherstone gone by, you know, an Oldham of, you know, spending big money and what they're probably look like in the future, a Bradford, I think he'd get even more plaudits and stand out even more. So for Widnes to get, you know, a player for 3 years tied down is brilliant business, and hopefully that'll help Alan Coleman with recruitment going forward, because players coming in, you know, will obviously know of Foz's qualities, and to see a player like that sticking around for 3 years, that's only going to help recruitment as well.
Yeah, he made his 100th appearance for Widnes against Featherstone recently. I think two things on Matty Foz, that he's barely missed a game, if at all, since he signed. He did 30 games last season, 29 the season before, 27 the season before that. So given the injuries that, well, all clubs have, but Widnes had over years, he's one that they can depend upon. I actually think another real positive is that I think he's actually improved quite a lot since his first season at Widnes. I thought, and I think that's a good sign, that even though you've got a player in, you know, and sometimes you forget that part-time players with the right attitude, which is certainly something that Matty Fozzard's got, can still improve and become better players, even though they might be seasoned pros, etc. Obviously, Widnes playing against his former team, London, where he was full-time and played in Super League for them as well. I think he deserves a lot of credit for that as well, is the way that he's improved. I think he's improved significantly from the player. He was a good player when Widnes signed him, but I actually think he's a level above even where he was when Widnes signed him. And to have a player that is prepared to do that and has that hunger to do that is crucial.
And I think as well, James, I think at the end of this season, there might be a smile and a handshake in the office of maybe he will get his number 9 jersey back as well, with the way he's performing this season.
Yeah, no disrespect to Jordan Johnson, to be fair, either. I mean, it was I know from speaking to Matty Fozzard in the pre-season, he was a little miffed at that. And to be fair, you can sort of see why he would have been.
But that isn't, do you know what? Sorry, James, just before you go on with your point there, I know you're going to say, and you've said it before, but isn't that the type of person that you want, where somebody's not been quite happy with something and the best way he's gone to show it is improve even further on the field and kick on again and prove people wrong that way rather than kicking stones?
Well, yeah, and he's not used it as a way of, all right, I'm getting the ump and I'm going somewhere else because the perception is that I'm not valued, which isn't necessarily, you know, it wasn't the case. It was just one of those situations. But I think the fact that he's rolled his sleeves up and got on with it is testament. And as you say, he's the exact sort of player that you want to be able to build your team around. Hooker's the key position in the game, in my opinion. And to have someone as good as him there is a positive for Widnes. Let's move on then to the big one. No pun intended. Martin Riley departing. A bit of a shock one. Forward who arrived from Batley, didn't play. Played two games last season due to injury, and then started this season fairly well. Well, before I say my thoughts, what do you think of it all, Mike?
What do I think of it all? Again, I think it's just yet another example of the state of the Championship transfer scenario. Fans getting really fed up and, quite frankly, finding it hard to buy into clubs at the moment at Championship level, because, you know, I think we said a couple of days ago, he was talking about that League One chairman, if I'm rightly saying, and he's speaking about players negotiating contracts or trying to get deals that haven't even played for clubs yet. And this is just yet another example of your Anthony Walkers, your Kieran Dixon, Ryan Lannans. And of course, that's not all the club's fault. And this happens at every single club, and there'll be more to follow. I think this is kind of the start of a bit of a domino effect that's going to go through the Championship of the next couple of weeks. So that side of things, you know, again, it's just another, without going on and around the houses about it, it's just another standout example of, you know, something needs to be sorted by the powers that will be in the RFL to stop this kind of thing for the supporters more than anything. As for Martin moving on, I've got to be honest, I was really excited when Martin joined the club. I thought he was, he's always impressed me at Championship level, especially his offloading game. Obviously, he had his horrendous injury last year. And he started the season, I thought, really strongly. And I thought, right, we could be cooking here with Dan Murray and Martin Riley as you starting props. But I think ever since the Warrington game, for my mind, it's kind of, his momentum's halted and he's become somewhat a little bit average over the last couple of weeks. And I think for me, part of the, I picked out Liam Kirk in the last podcast we did, and I think Martin can be included in that, where quite a lot of the time this year, our pack has been beaten. And even in games like the Sheffield game at home, if it wasn't for Deck Patton's long kicking game, we'd have probably lost that game as well. So we have struggled to get down the other end of the field and stay in opponent's house for a long time. And he's obviously was an integral part of the pack. So I think it needed a shake-up. Obviously, he's the one to go, and that obviously indicates another club's interested in him, and there's a deal that's done that's going to benefit both sides, which, you know, it'll soon tell where he's going. But my prediction will be he'll probably end up going, linking up with maybe Craig Lingard, because Sheffield have lost a couple of players themselves through the same sort of situation. But I think for me, it's shaking up the pack, and it looks like it's to leave room for people coming through the door this way, and hopefully just create a bit of a spark, because we are 1-7. And we do need to change things. And it's probably just a case of freeing up some cash to be able to do that. And he's the man that's felt to it.
Right. Well, brace yourself for this. Fans are being shortchanged, in my opinion, with this current situation. I think, as much as you name the RFL or the ultimate governing body, I think the clubs are culpable for this situation as well. They're all at it. They're all negotiating contracts during the season, not even the end of May, and fans are getting absolutely rinsed. You know, if fans turned around and said, you know what, I'm not bothering with season ticket this season, I'm just going to go to the first half of the season, see how it pans out, and then I'll decide what I do, the clubs will be up in arms. Well, why do they all think now that the situation is right? We have a 2025 squad, but 3 months into the season, because we've started looking at who's going to be in the 2026 squad, and because all of our players are talking to other clubs, we're going to end up, that squad that we sold you the 2025 season on, you know, actually, it doesn't matter because he's going to have to go. You're talking about signing players now on 18-month deals to include this season and next season. Well, this time next year, they might then be negotiating someone else, and they're probably only going to be here for 12 months anyway if they're not going to stay for the fall. It's an absolute farce.
And that's the concern, mate, when the club, a club are saying we're trying to sign players on two-year deals to look much further ahead. Well, that's all great on paper, isn't it? But you get halfway through it and they might be off anyway. What have we got six players who was meant to be here this season who have left already?
You might as well.
We have one of the smallest squads as well as it is.
Yeah, they might as well be signing someone on a 12-month deal that ends in the middle of next season. At the moment, it's an absolute farce, and I can't see how the club, like I say, as much as it's part of the system and everyone's at it, the clubs themselves have got to start looking at themselves, because fans are completely being turned off by it. It completely devalues
It's essentially devaluing a player's shirt, and I've stole that off someone because I've seen somebody put that on social media, and I thought, do you know what? You are bang on. You're bang right with that.
And listen, right, the other situation is as well that clubs are having these meetings, aren't they? You know, there's championship meetings going on. They're talking about, oh, well, we want our money off Super League. We want this off whatever. If 100 fans don't buy a season ticket next season because of, you could name a number of farces, the fixtures, the player contracts, the dual reg situation. If 100 people don't buy a season ticket for that reason, that's £20,000. Well, minimum, probably.
You know what, James? That'll happen across the championship. And I was speaking about winners, but in isolation, that will happen across the championship, and it's money out of rugby league.
No, that's 100 people, right? So if 100 people don't buy a season ticket, that's £20,000. Obviously, you know, circa £20,000. That doesn't then include secondary spend on, you know, what they might buy stuff at the game. They might buy merchandise from the club shop. They might be part of VIPs, whatever. Those are people that you're disengaging because of this behaviour that's going on. Because the clubs, for whatever reason, can't be bothered standing up for themselves because they're worried about what money they may or may not get from Super League. Well, the money that's coming down from Super League now is diminishing that much that actually, if you sat down and was like, right, if we get 500 more fans buying season tickets, that's 100 grand. And it, you know, and at the moment, are any of them clubs doing anything really to persuade fans to come and watch them? I don't think that they are. And I think that's what winds me up so much about it, is that it's so blatantly obvious to me that fans are just being completely disregarded in terms of, you know, the dual reg thing was already something that fans didn't like, particularly the whole IMG thing. I think if you asked the average fan, they would largely be against the artificial promotion relegation, etc. I'm just like, at what point? I feel like banging my head against a brick wall because I just feel like, am I the only person seeing these issues? And at what point are these clubs as businesses themselves? When is one of them going to, or when are they going to start standing up for themselves and being like, well, actually, this is stupid the way we're doing things at the moment. The only people it benefits are player agents, really. That's the only people who gain any benefit, because that means at the moment, player agents can work 12 months of the year at the moment. And you've got this silly situation where we talked about it in the last one. You're playing a team this week, you play a team last week. You've probably been speaking to a couple of your players the week before. And at what point do people, you know, at what point do these clubs not think, well, actually, the fans might be a bit miffed about this? In terms of Riley himself, I don't think he's a massive loss. I think he's done okay for Widnes. I think he's had one. He had one stinker of a game, which I think was the Barrow game, at home. But I think other than that, he was fairly solid. I think, you know, he ambled a bit into the tackles, but he always made good meters after contact. I think what I was a bit disappointed with is that you expect a player coming back from injury to be building back to fitness, but he never seemed to get fitter, if that made sense. He seemed to still be the same. Yeah. When he started, you know, he's the same in game one as he was in game 7, 8, or 9. And I think that was perhaps where you thought, when he first came back, you thought, oh, he's going to kick on from this level. I tweeted this before, you've probably already seen it. But Martin Riley only played 5 home games for Widnes. Now, granted, he was injured for the whole of last season, pretty much. But if you think he's been on the payroll at Widnes now for what is it? It's May, end of May, so what's June, July, August? He's been on the payroll for, what's that, 18 months? Well, probably more than 18 months, 18, 19 months, and he's played at Widnes's ground 5 times. Wow. And that sums it up, really.
Well, it does, doesn't it? And unfortunately, mate, it's just the latest one. There'll be another one in a couple of months, next year. whenever that'll be, we all know it. It'll happen again.
Yeah, let's go to some more positive. Let's talk about Brett Bailey. So Brett Bailey's gone on loan to Hunslet for a month, I think it was. Now, actually, and I've seen a few negative comments about this, I actually think this is a really positive sign or a positive move from Widnes, because we talked a little bit about hometown, homegrown players. Brett Bailey's Widnes lad was at St. Helens. I think he's one, potentially, a player that you could have around the club for you know, a good number of years. Now, at the moment, is he at the level where you would play him? I don't think that he is. He's only had that one outing this year, but I thought he was a bit off it. And clearly it's difficult to get game time. Alan Coleman mentioned it in the interview, didn't he? It's hard to get wingers and outside backs out, but props, you can get them out. So I actually think, I was actually really encouraged by that, because I'm thinking, well, if Bailey goes and plays for Hunslet, has four, you know, manages to get, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes each game under his belt at Hunslet in the Championship, he then comes back to Widnes with a bit more experience under his belt. Widnes will have a bit more video on him. He'll have tasted for Championship a bit more. Whether he then stays at Hunslet a bit longer or then becomes a contender to get into the Widnes team. So I actually see that as a positive. I know people have said, oh, why is he being loaned out when he's not being given a game? But I think some people get a little bit... It's funny when players, when they're not playing, become almost better, don't they? I always felt like...
Yeah.
You know, I can't think of other examples, but
it'll be like Bensi, won't it? You know, like a couple more defeats, everybody be shouting for Bensi to be back in the team for his tackling. Yeah, but when he's in the team and he's just tackling, everybody's got a problem with it.
I think, you know, like Joe Lyons is an example. He's not. Depp Patton and Tom Gilmore are better than Joe Lyons, but because Widnes were losing and Joe Lyons wasn't playing, all of a sudden it was like, oh, Joe Lyons should be in the team. And I always find that process of things being a bit, and I think Bailey's probably a good example of that at the moment. So I think it probably gets lost in all of what's going on this week, but I actually thought that was a positive one.
Yeah, it definitely is a positive one. I really want it to work for Brett, because obviously, you know, he's a young Widnes lad, and out of all the, if we want to bucket it them as project signings, he's kind of the last one around, and it, like I say, he is a Widnes lad, and we've seen him, you know, mix it up in his debut against York last season, and he picked up man of the match there. I think for Brett, from what I've observed, and I'm obviously no qualified coach or anything, he's quite a big lad, and I don't think his problem is taking the ball in contact. I feel because he is big, it's his retreat from Mark, you know, to the defensive line, and his speed of getting back and a quick hooker going and finding a gap before he's retreated. I think that's where he needs to learn the pace of the Championship. Now, going to Hunslet are a side where, look, they're the favourites to finish bottom, but they've got some quality in there, and what they are lacking is a couple of big middles to challenge. And I think going there off the beaten track a little bit will teach him, you know, the pace of the Championship on a regular basis. And I think the key is, ultimately, if he's going to make it, or if we're to know he's going to make it for Widnes and have a future at the club, we've got to know if he can handle it at Championship level on a regular basis. And if he can't get into our side, and there's obviously no academy or reserves, then it's absolutely the best thing he can do, and the coaching staff as well, to get some clips of his game. So, yeah, I'm absolutely with you, mate. He's still really young, and I think it'll really benefit him. And if I'm honest, if it goes well for him and we're quite healthy, I won't be against them extending it to the end of the season. So he's in one team playing consistently week in, week out, and then going into next season off the back of a pre-season. Of course, that's if we stay relatively healthy.
Yeah, it was a shame for him that he was injured at the start of the season, because he might have got some minutes in them early in them early games. But that, let's say, we'll take that as a positive. Right, let's move on to arrivals. So we've touched on it already. Adam Lawton is back on a two-week loan from Oldham, which basically is just this weekend's game against London because it's Challenge Cup next week. He's been a little out of favour at Oldham. I wonder whether this is something that's maybe brewing as a, might be an ongoing deal. I touched on it before. I think Lawton wouldn't should have kept. I think, yeah, he's a bit of a Marmite player, but I think if you could keep him in your squad, I think I always would have. And I think I actually think Simon Finnegan was the best coach for Adam Lawton. I thought Simon Finnegan got a real good tune out of Adam Lawton. I always make the point that if you're struggling near the line, which Widnes have been invariably this season, if you've got Adam Lawton there, you either give it him to crash over or he at least scatters a few defenders in doing so. And I think that's where he's potentially going to be a big addition. Clearly, he's got defensive frailties, but if he was the perfect player, he wouldn't be playing in the Championship. He'd be playing, you know, the size of him, he's a good rugby player. He'd be playing at the top end of Super League, really. So you've got to take the rough with the smooth, in my opinion. And I actually think bringing Lawton back, even if it is only a loan, isn't a bad move. I know people will disagree with me, but that's my thoughts.
I think Adam is probably as close as you can get with people, rocks or diamonds. I think, you know, you can go the games and he is just, when he's on it, he is absolutely unplayable. I think if he had his career again and he really wanted to do it, I think he could have played at the top level in Super League if he'd have had his career again and done things a little bit differently. That's my opinion, because I think he's got all the traits to do it. For me, we're not scoring enough points, and you've hit the nail on the head there. You know, close to the line, he's a weapon. Everybody will be previewing him. You've got to use him in the correct way. But if you can get him on a one-on-one, it's good night. Turn the lights off, it's a try. However, if you're up against it in a game, you know, his defence isn't the best. So, me personally, I'm happy with the signing. Out the players who left to go to Oldham, I wanted to keep Owen Farmworth and I wanted to keep Adam Lawton, because quite right, how you've just said there, in the Championship, these X-Factor players, they're all perfect, and you have got to take the rough with the smooth. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you've got to cover for these players' weaknesses to get the best out of them. The only thing I'm concerned about, and this is kind of a side topic really, is I'm expecting Oldham expenditure to go up, where I think a lot of them players who signed two seasons ago might be looking for other clubs. And I just hope, because the playing pool this side of the Pennines is, you know, there's a drought of part-time players this side, so it is a lot harder for Widnes to recruit. I just hope we don't almost take the easy option and take one too many back, because I do think there might be a potential playing pool opening up for us there to take what we kind of want, because players would rather stay on this side rather than have to travel over to Yorkshire if they're released by Oldham. I just hope we don't sign one too many of the old players back, because not all of them, but some of them left for a reason, because things needed to change.
Yeah, I think I agree with you to a point. I think it goes back to what I was saying about local players, and I think ultimately you want to be trying to keep a nucleus of players together and then invest your recruitment on adding some stars in around them. And, you know, in my view, Lawton and Farmworth as two players who came through the club system and are forwards, I'm like, if they were there, you've obviously got Owens and Gilmore and Fozard and then Johnston. All of a sudden then, and I know we're talking hypothetically about players, aren't they? You know, Joe Edge is still around. I think the more, that's your foundation. And I think that's where people have got to realise that a lot of these other clubs in the, or a lot of the more successful clubs in the Championship, they build themselves around that foundation. That's the whole purpose of players, teams bringing their own players through. They might have a rough season, or they might have a bad season, but I don't think that makes them bad players. And I think, given how hard it is, as we've seen, to recruit players to replace them or to come in from outside, that actually you're almost better with what you know sometimes. But moving on from Lawton, another addition is another positive one, is Luke Thomas from Warrington has signed, well, on dual reg, I think, until the end of the season. He was very good off the bench against Oldham, picked up an injury which has ruled him out since then. He made a return for Warrington's reserves last week, so he's good to go for Widnes's trip. Is he in the squad for London?
Yeah.
I think he was, yeah, which I was half surprised at, because I thought Warrington might be putting out a weakened team against Castleford and he might get a nudge there. But I think he's a good addition. And if we can see it work like we did with Lucas Green last season, where he's there every week, I think that's a massive positive. I actually think Thomas is an upgrade on Martin Riley, in my opinion.
Well, going off that 20 minutes we saw against Oldham on Good Friday, half an hour, however long it was, absolutely. If he can bring that every single week, you're cooking on gas. You've got a heck of a player who wants to find a home somewhere in the rugby league world, and he's out to impress. I think Morgan McWhirter last week, when we watched him, I think we was kind of expecting that impact player off the bench. I don't think he quite actually is going to transpire into that. But Luke Thomas is that player who can come off the bench, mix it up, speed the game up, powerful, chuck himself about, belt in some tackles. I think hopefully he can stay fit, because in that game against Oldham on Good Friday, he was rattling around some experienced players in like Gil Dudson. You know, the Chapel House had been around for some time. He had no respect for anybody, did he? And I think that is a kind of mentality and a type of player we've not had on our books this year. So for me, cracking sign, and I hope he can stay as long as possible.
Yeah, he's 22 as well, so he's a good age, really. He's not just a kid coming out of the academy. He's actually now got to, as you sort of intimated there, he's actually got to start making an impact to figure out where he's going to end up. Is he going to establish himself in Super League? Is he going to drop out of the full-time game? He's almost on that precipice at the moment. And as you say, his main trouble has been with injuries. He's had a couple of serious ones. So hopefully he can get a run of games, stay injury-free, and be of benefit to Widnes. We're probably, based on what the club have said this week, we're probably expecting to see another new face. There has been some talk of another Australian forward maybe coming in, but whether it sounds like something's in the offing, whether it is a forward or whether it's someone else, who knows? But I think that's another point to make, is we've seen a little bit of player movement, but there's been a lot of in and out. And actually, Widnes were in a place where we sort of touched upon it with the McWhirter. McWhirter came in effectively to replace Ryan Lannan, whereas Widnes were at a stage where they needed more bodies rather than just getting one in and one out. So maybe if another signing does happen, Widnes will end up having made positive changes to the squad over this period.
I think overall, in the end, if it works out that way, yes, because it's ironic, isn't it? All these players are now starting to get the deals over the line, and in the transfer market, in the Championship, quite often one deal gets made and then that has a knock-on effect to many clubs. And now we're at a point where we're starting to get these deals over the line. But it's just ironic, isn't it? You know, everybody's kind of coming back to fitness. You got Lewis Hall who's round the corner making good progress. You've got Depp Patton coming back in. And it's just sod's law, isn't it, sometimes, where, you know, maybe a few weeks ago these players coming in, that they've been, you know, the perfect time, where Alan really, he was picking from, you know, 17 fit players, to now where you are leaving out some senior players. But I think for me, that's a massive positive. If you're leaving out players who have got in double figures appearances for you because you've got a preference to another player because they're playing better, that's where you want to be as a coach. And I think the teams who make the playoffs, ultimately, they have competition for places. And I think that's what it's about. And I think one thing Alan does have a massive point in is, you know, player motivation. If you're dropped for your performance levels dipping, you know, when you get the chance again, you've got to perform better, and it adds competition. So hopefully that can kick a bit of a spark back into the team as well, ready for obviously the trip to London, but then these big three home games we've got coming up.
Yeah, so Widnes on the road to London this weekend. It's a 5 o'clock kickoff. I think I'm training it, Mike, to be honest, this week. I think I'm on the train from Runcorn. I think I'm early doors. I think I'm 9:30 or something like that. The game is being live streamed on 247.tv, which is the same platform used to live stream the Bradford game last week. It's £10, which means you can watch the match live, but then also you can watch it again in your own time. Widnes have announced the squad. It's Owens, Edge, Butt, Lyons, Gilmore, Murray, Johnston, Lloyd, Langtree, McWhirter, Fozard, Bent, Kirk, Roberts, Gregson, Bennion, Towes, Williams, Thomas, Lawton, and Mason. So missing from that is Ince and Fleming from the start, but I don't think anybody else notable. Missing there. Who's 10? Did Riley have 10? Riley had number 10. So fairly solid squad for Widnes, and a must-win game, really.
Yeah, I'll go as far to say, James, if you're not winning this game, that's it for playoffs. There's no coming back. And that's not to say we're not going to win a game again or stuff like that. You'll have lost too much momentum and there'll be too much points to gain for me. However, I do think we'll come to the predictions later, but I do think there was enough in that Bradford performance to suggest that we will win on Saturday. You know, I thought Mason, you could see the defenders standing off him, and that was at Oddsall, where, let's have it right, you know, he's a player who likes a big pitch. I think London's pitch will suit Jake, so that's a positive. I'm hoping that we might see Jack Owens at standoff, but even if he's in the centres, he's been playing well. And you know, we had two probably bad 10 minutes against Bradford. I think the rest of the time we went toe-to-toe with them, and that was probably the biggest frustration, really. That, and I've noticed, you know, London are looking very threadbare and youthful. I was looking at their squad, and I think they've got 5 lone players joining them. You'd hope Widnes have too much experience and too much quality to beat them.
Yeah, I seen they'd added they'd signed an Aussie, hadn't they, London?
I think he's not going to be ready for the game, Ethan Natoli's back for them, and he'll be ready to play.
You like you say, Widnes have got to be winning this game, really. I mean, Hugh Worthington's number 8 at London, and he had a bit of a trial spell at Widnes, didn't he, and never really got near to the team.
Lewis Beanek's not playing. He's a massive miss. He's their pack leader as well.
Yeah, and even the lads that they're pulling in are very raw sort of young players from Super League clubs, not ones that have really, you know, there are some players that have already bounced around the Championship a bit, and it is a must-win game. I wonder whether, you talked about Mason there, I wonder whether he might be someone that benefits from Lawton being back. You could imagine if Mason can get running behind Adam Lawton, that there might be some offloads there to be had. So
maybe go back to your hypothesis from a few weeks ago, Benty for tackling and Lawton for breaking through.
Yeah, potentially. We'll see. Before we go on to the Q&A, let's do the predictions. We missed last week, so we're tied now. Mike, you got one back on me, so we're tied at 41 all. There's some tough calls this weekend. Saturday, Batley Toulouse is one. I think we're going to go with Toulouse, or I'm going to go with Toulouse for that, and I presume you'd be the same.
Yeah, not much to add to that, really.
Widnes, we're back in Widnes.
Yep, for me.
Now, Sunday is where it gets interesting. Well, in fact, actually, I don't think it's that interesting, but this one's the most interesting one. Barrow against Featherstone at Barrow.
Featherstone for me. I think they're coming on strong now. I think they've turned the corner, James, and I think they will make the playoffs or top six, whatever way we're wording it, because we don't really know what's going on. But
yeah,
top six. And I'm going to say they'll win.
Yeah, I think Featherstone. I sort of said it in the last episode. I feel like Barrow and Halifax are on there.
I think they're slowly declining
into this middle area of teams, and I think maybe this is the week where that starts to come to fruition for Barrow.
I think Barrow as well, they're coming back from Toulouse as well, which I think will have a part to play in it as well.
Doncaster versus Bradford.
Got to go for Bradford, but I'm going to say rather than the previous game, this could be if the Jekyll and Hyde, if the good Doncaster turn up, I think, you know, Bradford might not have it all their own way, but I've got to go with Bradford.
Yeah, Bradford for me. Hunslet versus Oldham.
Oldham for me, you know, Zane Musgrove going in. Elrar Pelissier, players like Owen Farm have gone to Rochdale on due registration. Adam Lawton coming to us on a 2-week loan. I think that kind of says it all of how strong Oldham are at the moment.
And then the final game is York versus Sheffield.
York for me. I think, you know, they'll carry on their march to be a top three, top four side after traditionally starting slow as they always do. But yeah, too much quality, and Sheffield, you know, the coughing and spluttering everywhere, aren't they, at the moment?
Do you not feel like York might have half an eye on Wembley?
I think they've got too much squad depth, mate. I just think they're too good of a team, but we'll see.
Right, Q&As. We promised to do Q&As before we knew how much there was to do, so we'll try and get through some of these. I've got one to kick us off with. Mike, and I apologise to David Stacey because he did send me this a couple of weeks ago and I've not managed to squeeze it in. He's talking about, or his question is, when the inevitable happens and the NRL buy into or take over Super League, I think it's far from inevitable, but I suppose it is on the table. Where do we think that will leave Widnes? And more broadly, the Championship as a whole?
Do you want me to go first?
Well, if you want.
I think you just have to look at the NRL model. I think there'll be certain teams in it. I think there'll be big area related. I don't think it'll go as much to mergers as what the NRL has, just because of the pullback of traditional sport in England. But I think what you'll find is a closed shop, and like the Queensland Cup, you know, New South Wales one as well. I think Widnes would just operate at a very low part-time level with the rest of the clubs, and there'd be just a cut-off, no promotion, no relegation. And then the teams at the top, you know, more teams would hopefully, you know, come in and expand that competition at the top tier. But I think as for witness, I think that'd just mean, you know, on a permanent basis, that'd be for the rest of your history, part time.
Yeah, I think this is sort of one of the reasons why I think some of the bigger part-time clubs, and I include Widnes in that, really need to start thinking a bit more logically and a bit more realistically. You probably won't notice, but Rugby Union are going through this exact same situation at the moment where clearly the Premiership is the full-time league. They still have promotion and relegation to the Championship. And effectively, the Championship clubs are now trying to... they've rebranded to Champ Rugby. They're trying to make a big noise about their semi-pro comp or their second tier, and make it its own, you know, a competition in its own right that's, you know, they're appointing directors and head of whatever, and they're almost looking at it as its own thing, you know, like you've got someone who's director of that league who's trying to raise its profile, trying to, you know, do what's best for it. And it doesn't feel like they have that in rugby league at the moment. And I feel like that's something that the part-time clubs now have got to start realistically thinking about. Is Super League ever going to be on the agenda for... clearly, we're going to be at a crossroads, aren't we, in the next, however long it takes for this to happen. You're going to get to a crossroads, I think, where either we're going to plod on the way it is now, and even if it plodded on the way it is now, Widnes's chances of Super League are fairly remote. Or is there going to be this big swing where an outside investor, whether that be the NRL or otherwise, comes in and says, right, we want these 10 teams, and when I say 10 or 12 teams, whatever, it's going to be the big six or seven clubs, you know, Leeds, Wigan, Saints, Warrington, Hull, Hull KR, Catalan maybe. They're going to want Bradford in there. They're going to want London Broncos in there. The only hope Widnes have got is that if an investor comes in who quite fancies a look at Widnes, that they pull them in. Widnes have... All Widnes have got really is the name, isn't it? The heritage. That's all really that Widnes have to offer in comparison to, you know, to certain other clubs. So that's why I think that I'd try and spend more energy on coming up with a strategy. As you say, if Super League exists as the elite full-time comp, well, why can't we create a British Rugby League Championship that means something to win? And that's my view. Whether it happens, I don't know. I mean, at the moment, you know, at the moment, God knows what's going to happen. I have no idea what's going to happen, and that's what makes it difficult.
You might have wiped out our second question there, James, because you've probably answered it quite well. But we could do a podcast on this one, actually. How would you make the Championship a more attractive proposition for fans and clubs to win it?
I'd recommend looking at what Rugby Union are trying to do with Champ Rugby. They're currently recruiting for people as well to work for it. I think, you know, clearly part of the issue at the moment is that everyone looks at Super League as the be-all and end-all. I think prestige is part of it. I think partly Rugby League's very good at talking itself down. I mean, you only have to look at what they do with the League Leaders Shield. I mean, it's a crap name. It looks crap. And so it reacts as crap. If that was darts, as an example, darts wouldn't call the League Leaders Shield the League Leaders Shield. They'd call it the Premiers or something, you know, make a big song and dance over, put a bit of prize money up for it. I think there's got to be a reset at some point in terms of money. I think clearly I would imagine there's quite a vast difference in the money from the top of the Championship to the bottom. And I think at some point that's got to be levelled out somehow. And I think that would actually be the first step to then coming up with a realistic, you know, a realistic plan for, like, how do we make it attractive? You know, I think the problem is at the moment there's too many people thinking, oh, what if we can get into Super League, if you know what I mean, to want to be focusing on how you make the championship. Money obviously always helps, but I think it just needs to be run. There just needs to be purpose to it, whereas at the moment it's just a league that exists for the teams that they don't want to have in Super League.
It's a good point you make, actually, and I've never directly thought about it like that until you've just said it and put it out in front of me. But it is right. Like, it is all about making Super League. And if you don't win the championship and you finish fourth, but you're progressing in other ways, clubs are kind of happy with that. Like you say, you know, it comes down to money and promoting yourself, and you know, that's down to the clubs and the RFL. I think the only other thing that I'd add to that is for the championship, forget promotion and relegation to the top tier, the championship and League One. There needs to be a structure that's kept with. Now, I read an article of Matt Shaw's a couple of days ago, and there's talk again of, you know, is it the East and West conferences and it all being one division next year? I think for me, look how many league structures have we had over the years. And, you know, for fans who have 1 or 2 years out the game and then they come back because they fancy a game, they don't have a clue what's going on. I think it needs a strict identity and it needs to be stuck to and it needs to be well thought out. You know, it can't be, let's try this, let's try that. But like you say, I think the major competitions, the 1895 Cup and the Championship, whatever that looks like, and League One, if it's separate, it's got to be decorated. It's got to mean something. And they've got to find a way of putting money into it that it's worth winning. Like, I know the crowds ain't there anymore, but I'm sure you remember. I was a kid, but you know when the grand finals were at like Warrington and Headingley, played OKR at Warrington and Castleford, and the League One game was before the Championship game, and then they had the amateur teams on even before that, dinner time, and it was a proper day as a festival, and I remember it being packed, and I used to love it. It was a great day if you got there, but that just doesn't exist anymore, and obviously that's a massive part of that's because crowds have dwindled, but that's where you've got to look. You've got to look why has that happened do we need to do to try and bring them days back to this competition?
Well, when it first happened was because they brought licensing in. So, you know, last grand final that got promoted was one that Widnes lost against Castleford, and there was 20,000 there. And then they scrapped promotion after that to go to licensing. And then, same with the Northern Rail Cup. I always thought the Northern Rail Cup was decent. You know, you used to get a decent crowd at Blackpool every year, and they sort of ruined that. And I think there's those little things that the little basic things that they take for granted and then just jib off. My thought on it was, I have made a list of this, and maybe we'll go on this in another episode, but you could, let's take Toulouse out of the equation. You could say that the semi-pro team become the English or British rugby league champions, because ultimately Super League will be a European, you know, whoever wins Super League is the European champions in theory. So why not say, right, what we're going to do is the championship is now going to be a continuation of the, you know, the old championship from pre-1996 as a way of adding prestige to it and being like, right, part-time clubs. And by the way, and I'm going off on a tangent here, I would, if we're going to go down this road, I would let the Super League teams play their reserve teams in Championship, like, or League One or whatever. I'm completely against the conference idea, by the way. I think that's a terrible idea. Because you're basically just going to end up with a Yorkshire League and the rest. But I think if you need, there's clearly not enough teams. There's probably too many teams for one league, isn't there? And then there's not enough for the two. But if you added, if you're saying, right, Super League's going to become a closed shop and a franchise league, I would let Wigan, Saints, Leeds put reserve teams in the semi-pro comp rather than...
You know what you might might do as well, James, accidentally. You might sort out the charade of the loan system, because teams might be more willing to keep their own players and play in a competitive league.
But I think what you do, if you do that, is you would then put like the expansion teams, so like say London Scholars came back, or you know, Midlands or teams like that. Clearly one of the issues is travel for part-time. But if a Super League club, as part of their development of the game, they have to play in a league, they have to play in the Southern League, if you want, or, you know, let's just say there's a Championship and then there's a League One North and a League One South or whatever. Yeah. Them Super League reserve teams have to play in League One South to then give them clubs someone to play. Now, obviously, it's probably happened too late, because a lot of them expansion teams have disappeared. You know, years ago we had Cornwall, Oxford, Gloucester, London Scholars. They're all not there anymore. But that was, I thought, was the best way of doing it years and years ago. My worry with the conference thing is I'm just like, well, is there going to be enough interest in the games? I'd like to see it on paper what the format's going to be, but I'm like, you're going to end up playing the same team. You're basically going to end up playing the same teams year in, year out. With no real deviation. Now, they might turn around and say the fixture list is going to be like this. This is how we're going to work out the fixture list, which then might make it different. But it's not something that attracts me. I want to watch Widnes play Bradford. I don't really want to watch Widnes play, well, Swinton, with all due respect to Swinton, unless Swinton are off the level. Do you know what I mean? I think that's the issue that you've got is, The top half championship clubs, really, or the top 10 championship clubs, they've no real reason to change, because they're fine. The only teams it benefits really are the League One clubs, and I get why get why they need to change. Don't get me wrong.
If you get put in the traveling conference, if you're Widnes, for example, like, you're suffering, really. You're one of the clubs that do it right in terms of attendances. The only thing else I'd like to throw into the mix, actually, and again, it comes down to costs, and I know there'd be a bit of a challenge to this because of the polar opposite seasons, really. You've seen a lot of players coming over now. Obviously, McWhirter's come towards, you know, London have picked up a few, Halifax, but I'd quite like to see the concept of a couple of French teams playing a couple of the top championship clubs and putting on a bit of a one-off display, maybe, you know, at this before the first game of the championship, you know, to get it going, do something like that a little bit.
Yeah, I always thought I've been to France and I've been to games at Carcassonne and stuff, and you know, it's mad when you go there because people talk about, oh, rugby league's an M62 sport, and then you go to, you're in Carcassonne in the south of France, and there's people who love the Super League and love NRL as much as we do, or people like us do. And it's like, why don't we tap into this more? I actually think the Super League, instead of all these fancy Dan, you know, pre-season camps they go on, why doesn't the Super League club take Warrington, for example, at the back end of January, go and stay in the south of France, play a friendly against Carcassonne on a Saturday night? It'll be well attended in Carcassonne. You help support the growth of the game there. And you're sort of ticking, you know, you're ticking a few boxes at the same time. But I am in agreement with you. My master plan involves sort of having the English Championship and the French Championship sitting side by side to try and encourage that feat. You know, the Super League, at the end of the day, if Super League becomes a closed shop, that's not to say that no one's ever going to get in it. You know, you could become a dominant part-time team that then aspires to become part of the Super League. And if you wanted to, if you had the English and French Championship going side by side, you could have promotion relegation back up there if you wanted to. But I agree with you on the crossover fixtures. I think that'd be a great thing. And I know they did try it, didn't they, maybe 10 years ago, I think, when Widnes were in Super League. And it was a typical rugby league thing. All the crowds are crap, so we sacked it off. And it's like, you've got to stick to it. Because I think that French comp's a decent standard.
I think going back when I was a kid and stuff, I think a few of the teams like Pierre, and I think we played Lezignan on a Thursday night once at home, and they used to drop in the Challenge Cup, didn't they, for a few years. But for me, but you talk about build something up, brand something up. You know, you can have a mini competition there, you know, entering into the championship season or whatever it'd look like. I just feel the French Elite League needs exposure and the championship needs exposure. And maybe, just maybe, they need each other to help each other out, to give them something else. And like you say, it is a good standard. I know some of the games are on YouTube and I stick them on sometimes. And people will be surprised of some of the players who are still hanging around in that French division. You know, you've got players like Morgan Escarrez still there and players like that.
I think the top championship teams, I think, are much better than the French elite teams.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you time it right, so like, you know, at the end of January, the French teams are in the middle of their season, championship's only just starting. There's maybe the chance of playing them where you're going to catch them cold. When the French season's obviously coming to an end now, do you create something around this time of year where you have a mini tournament or something between the teams because they're at the peak of their season? I suppose it depends on what the strategy is, doesn't it? It depends on, you know, you can go, Widnes clearly a little intertwined with it because Widnes were effectively punted out of Super League for Catalan to come in. And I suppose you would raise the question, well, what's the benefit? You know, what is the strategy for helping France? Why do we need to help France? But I think ultimately Rugby League has only really got England in the Northern Hemisphere. Wales is there a little bit, but France is your only real chance of developing a larger player pool and more clubs. So
it's the player pool, but it's also bringing excitement, playing new teams, watching different players if you're a championship team. So I think by helping them, you're helping yourself as well.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens with that. What else you got, Mike, before we sign up?
The last one before we sign off, mate, because I know we've been going on for quite some time now, but do you know what the requirements are to invest in the club? Maybe this is one, mate, where we can try and get Stuart Murphy or someone from the board or the club to do another interview with us at some stage.
The short answer, I guess, and I have no idea, by the way, but the short answer, I guess, is to have money. That's what I'm going with.
Yeah.
To be fair, I think Stuart's been fairly open. I think in the past where he said, if anyone wants to have a chat about investing in the club or come on board, that, you know, his email's on the website or whatever, and you know, to get into touch. I don't think it's a trade secret necessarily. I think if you're in, you know, and I presume that's how the likes of Andrew Orban and Matt Taylor and Matt Roberts have got involved.
Precisely that. You know, since Stuart's been on board, you know, a couple of directors have come in. I think for me, more so, you know, speaking to the club, asking them questions, the investment side, I think everybody understands and gets. But it'd be interesting to know the breakdown of the roles and what people are doing in these board of directors roles, what the responsibilities are, what the plan is moving forward. I think that's probably maybe the bigger question at play of what's Andy Horobin's role going to be, what's the biggest target and the plan moving forward.
Yeah, you know, from speaking to Matt on the podcast the other week, he sort of discussed that they were talking about what roles each of them would have and taking on a bit more of a responsibility. So maybe that's something we can pick up with Stuart or otherwise in the coming weeks. Right, we've been rabbiting on for a while now, so we've basically done 2 hours of podcast this week, Mike. So I'm going to go for a lie down now.
Down next week, won't they? After that, 2 in a week.
Yeah. We'll see you in London on Saturday, 5 o'clock kickoff. As I say, it is being live streamed. So if you've got a tenant, or if you have other means, you can watch the game. But of course, you can listen to commentary on BBC Radio Merseyside online. I'm going down to do it, back on the horse this week, so to speak. But yeah, lots of news. Thanks as always, everyone, for their feedback and for your comments. But that's it from us for this week. We'll see you next time.